So we are reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, 20th chapter, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Prithu. This morning, text number 7, the Lord is continuing to address Prithu Maharaj. Let's get the text out there. So text 7, huh?
Ekah
Shuddhah Swayam Jyotir Nirguno Asau Gunashrayah Sarvago Anavritta Sakshi Niratmatmatmanah Paraha Ekashuddha Swayam Jyotir Nirguno Saugunashraya Sarvagona Vritta Sakshi Niratmatmatmana Paraha Ekashuddha Swayam Jyotir Nirguno Saugunasraya Sarvagunna Vrita Sakshi Niratmatmatmana Paraha Ekashuddha Swayam Jyotir Nirguno Saugunasraya Sarvagunavrita Sakshi Niratmatma Manas Paraha Ekashuddha Swayam Jyotir Nirguno Saugunasraya Sarvagunavrita Sakshi Niratmatmatmanaparaha
Ekashuddha Swayam Jyotir
Ekashuddha Swayam Jyotir
Nirguno
Saugunashraya Sarvagona Vrita Sakshi Niratmatmatmanaparaha Ekashuddha Swayam Jyotir Nirguno Saugunasraya Sarvagona Vrita Sakshi Niratmatmatmana Paraha Ekashuddha Swayam Jyotir Shuddhah, pure, Swayam, self, Jyotihi, effulgent, Nirgunaha, without material qualifications, Asau, that, Guna Ashrayaha, The reservoir of good qualities. Sarvagaha. Able to go everywhere. Anavrittaha. Without being covered by matter. Sakshi. Witness. Niratma. Without another self. Atma Atmanaha. To the body and mind. Paraha. Transcendental. Translation. The individual soul is one, pure, non-material, and self-effulgent. He is the reservoir of all good qualities, and he is all-pervading. He is without material covering, and he is the witness of all activities. He is completely distinguished from other living entities, and he is transcendental to all embodied souls. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the previous verse, two significant words are used, asamshaktaha, meaning without attachment, and buddhaha, meaning fully cognizant of everything. By full cognizance, it is meant that one should know about his own constitutional position as well as the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in this verse, Lord Vishnu is describing himself, or the Paramatma, even though it says the individual soul, Prabhupada puts that here, actually, in the text, all the he's are capitalized. So this is the Paramatma is being described. The Paramatma is always distinguished from the embodied soul as well as the material world. Therefore, he has been described as Para. That Para, or Supreme Personality of Godhead, Para is the last word in this text, huh? That Para, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Eka, the first word in the text, meaning one. The Lord is one, whereas the conditioned souls embodied within the material world exist in many varieties of form. There are demigods, human beings, animals, trees, birds, bees, and so forth. Thus the living entities are not Eka, but many. As confirmed in the Vedas, nityo nityanam chetanash chetananam, the living entities who are many and who are entangled in the material world are not pure. However, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pure and detached. The next word to see is shuddha. So he's pure. However, the Supreme, due to being covered by the material body, the living entities are not self-effulgent. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, is self-effulgent, Swayam Jyoti. The living entities, being contaminated by the modes of material nature, are called Saguna. Whereas the Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Nirguna, not being under the influence of the material modes. He's described here as Nirguna. The living entities, being encaged in material qualities, uguna are guna shritta, whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead is gunashraya. The conditioned soul's vision is covered by material contamination. Therefore, he cannot see the cause of his actions and cannot see his past lives. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, not being covered by a material body, is the witness of all activities of the living entity. But both of them, the living entity, and the Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are Atma, or Spirit. They are one in quality, yet they are different in so many ways, especially in regard to the six opulences the Supreme Personality of Godhead has in full. Full knowledge means that the Jivatma, the living entity, must know both his position and the Supreme's position. That is full knowledge. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namani Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaudavari Pacharini Divishesha Sunyavari Paschacha De Sitarini Om Mangyanam Timaram Dasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Navaha Vancha Kalpa Tripyascha Kripa Sindhu Beba Chakpitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. The individual soul is one, pure, non-material, self-effulgent. He's the reservoir of all good qualities, and he's all-pervading. He's without material covering, and he is the witness of all activities. He's completely distinguished from other living entities, and he is transcendental to all embodied souls. But here we come to an interesting situation where the word Atma is being used, and this will happen in the next verse too, where you can read it so many different ways. So Prabhupada follows Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment and says that here this, what's referred to as the Paramatma. I have seen, I've not read other commentaries to this particular text, but I've seen plenty of texts where the word Atma shows up, and one Acharya will say, this is Paramatma, and another Acharya will say, this is the Jiva, is being described. And then they read everything else in the text according. So I would not be surprised in this verse also that other commentators have taken this to refer to the individual soul, as Prabhupada starts out like that, the individual soul. But here and then in the next verse, there's one word, Atmanam, and which Prabhupada translates as the individual Atma and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma. So that one word has two denotations. In philosophy, you make a distinction. A word has connotation and a denotation. The connotation is the meaning, and the denotation are the set of things to which it refers. So sometimes, yes. So this here, the connotation, the meaning, or the sense and the reference, another way to make that distinction, the sense of the word and the reference of the word, or the intention and the extension, actually, three different ways of saying it. So here, Atma means the self. That's the connotation. But the denotation can be the individual self, or the Paramatma, or both. And also, of course, Atma is also a little puzzling, because here when it says Niratma Atmanatmana, the Atma, one Atma is body and the other Atma is mind, because as self being a reflexive word, it sometimes refers to the body, sometimes to the mind, sometimes to the individual soul, and sometimes to the Supreme Soul. So you have to know your way around to know what these mean. But what's happening here is that these verses reflect a kind of progression from karma to jnana to bhakti. Because you remember, we're starting off with the whole business of the trouble you get into when you are performing karmakanda activities, namely horse sacrifices, and how that by that people get on the bodily platform of material competition and prestige and so on. And so part of the significance of the stopping of the horse sacrifices is we are going to come to a higher platform, and this is what the Lord is teaching. So this is a natural progression from karma. This is a natural progression, karma, jnana, bhakti. It's a dialectic of spiritual progression. And so when one becomes disgusted or turns away from karma, that is to say activities in the material world, and seeks transcendence, the experience is that one first encounters the impersonal aspect of the Lord. And there's either only a perception of spiritual oneness or only an interest in oneness. Because we are in trouble in the material world because of divisions and differences. We get in trouble because of dvandva moha, the delusion of duality, friend, enemy, rich, poor, black, white, male, female. You can list all these dualities, all based on the body, all based on these differences and distinctions, and all of which cause us trouble and difficulty. So transcendence must be, is ekaha, is oneness. There's no duality, is free from all duality. And so I perceive that, I perceive the unity. Is the first thing that really attracts me to transcendence is the unity. And that's the aspect I focus on. And this is called a Brahmavadi. So there's a little, the vocabulary is a little like that. The emphasis is on oneness, and the emphasis on the similarity between the individual soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Typical of this position. Then you make more advancement in the progress of jnana. Now some people conclude there, that's as far as they get, and they just oneness, and they get stuck in that platform. But if you make further progress, you become a devotee. As Krishna says quite clearly in the Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavam amprapadyate. That person who is possessed of gyan is gyanavan. After being a gyani, usually bahunam janmanam ante, this takes several births study and realization. Then when he finally becomes successful in his gyan, what does he do? Mam prapadyate. He surrenders to me. So that's the real gyan. He has come to the point of being a devotee of Krishna. Vasudeva sarvamiti, he says or thinks, Vasudeva, Krishna, is everything. Samahatma sadurlabha. And this Mahatma, this great soul, is not your ordinary street corner Mahatma, but a rare Mahatma who's reached this conclusion. So this is the progression. If you're actually successful in your jnana, usually this includes getting the mercy of devotees somewhere along the line, you go from being a Brahmavadi or even a Mayavadi, to a devotee, like the four Kumaras, for example. They're absorbed in Brahman, in Brahman realization. They're only interested in oneness. But when they went to Vaikuntha and smelled the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, covered with tulsi, the fragrance of the tulsi, because they're little boys, so they're down low, maybe they got the aroma easily. Immediately their hearts filled with attraction for the Lord, and they became bhaktas. So this is on this position. So you could read this text two different ways. It's possible to do that. But here we're following Vishwanath Chakravarti. So See, the Lord is Nirguna. The living entities are Saguna in their conditioned form. But there's another way you could get the living entity, who in a way never becomes in contact with the material world. His covering is only illusory, so he's actually in the ultimate sense also Nirguna. Like that, one can read it that way. This word here is Gunashraya. So the word guna has two ways to mean. One is the modes of material nature, and the other is just sometimes it's used to say good qualities.
Right? Can I ask a question? Or
no? On this topic?
Or yeah. I'm just curious. The famous line that you wrote about 20 years ago in the old Yoga Rush article, where the guy at one point says, "Hey man, you're creating duality."
Yeah, that's right.
Did that actually happen?
Yeah, that truly happened.
Okay, because that was a great example of somebody who was stuck.
Yeah. Well, these were the followers of, what was his name? That Bengali tennis player. Guru Sri Chinmoy.
Sri Chinmoy.
Yeah, they were followers of Sri Chinmoy. But really they were accepting, you know, the version of Mayavad philosophy propounded by Vivekananda. So they're really Mayavadis. There's a difference between a Brahmavadi and a Maya. They're really Mayavadis. And that's true, the guy said that. Hey man, you create duality.
And so, did you try to bring
them
a higher plane there? No, they weren't ready.
It was time to quit.
They were too envious.
Yeah. They just started pretending to be devotees completely. You know, it was a kind of a disguise. This is the kind of these people. They act like devotees. They take up the role of devotees. They're even assigned an Ishta Deva to worship, and so a lot of times that Ishta Deva is Krishna. So they chant japa, they wear tilak and everything. But in the back of their minds is the notion that when I achieve, when I really get where I'm going, Krishna and I become one, and I become God. So it's like I kind of use the disguise of a devotee to sneak up on him and get close, and at the last minute I whip off my disguise, I take out my sword, neti neti neti, kill him and take his place. That's what reminded me of Putana, who was disguised as a goddess of fortune. Hostile bhakti, actually. It contains a hostility toward Krishna. Whereas in the Brahmavadi position, they're interested in oneness, but when they actually encounter devotees of Krishna, they become attracted to Krishna, such as the four Kumaras, and Sukadeva Goswami also. Sukadeva Goswami was in the womb of his mother. He was self-realized in the womb, no reason to get out, because he's self-situated. Why go out? Why do anything? He's situated in oneness. But when he heard his father dictating Bhagavatam, he became attracted. Now, why should he be attracted? And took birth so he could learn it. So why if somebody is Atmarama, who's already satisfied in himself, why should it be attracted to the activities of Krishna? From a Mayavadi point of view, all activities are Maya. Because these activities of Krishna are transcendental, they're spiritual activities. And so when one begins to understand transcendental or spiritual variety, then one advances to the point of view of a devotee. And Prabhupada cites here this text, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam Eko Bahunam Yogadatikamam. This shows up in two different Upanishads. And this really says that in transcendence there are two classes of being. Because the word nityaha is singular and nityanam is a genitive plural. Huh? So this is, there's one singular nitya among many, many, many nityas. There's one singular chaitana, one singular conscious being among many, many, many chaitanas. Eko bahunam, so eka is one and bahuna is the many. Eka bahunam yo viridati kaman, and is the one who is satisfying all the needs of the many. That is to say that the one is independent and the many are dependent. So this is talking about transcendence, talking about spiritual reality. Nitya and Chaitanya are characteristics of spirit. So in transcendence, there's a class division. There's the independent class, which is one. You see, that set of the one, that is a set which only has one member. This nitya, singular. And that's one meaning of one without a second. There's nobody else in the category of Vishnu Tattva. That's the one. And then there's another set which is plural, as uncountable multitudes. This is the Jiva Tattva. And the difference is that the jivas are all derived and dependent. We require to be maintained. In this world, we require heat, light, food, water. And where do they come from? Well, ultimately, they're supplied by the devatas. There's a supply chain. You trace it back, it comes from the devatas. Where do the devatas get it from? Well, you can say, well, these devatas, they get it from Brahma. Then where does Brahma get it from? Then finally you come to a unique being which supplies everything but does not need any supplies. This is the one, the absolute truth, who gives and distributes but remains full. This Purnamadapurnamidam. This is the unique entity, unlike us. See, we deplete. I take out my wallet and hand out money, and then it's empty. I need resupply. I have to go to the ATM or something. But when it comes to the Absolute Truth, when it comes to Krishna, he just supplies and he never needs refueling. This is the unique, this is the idea of the Absolute Truth, such a being who is complete that if you take away 100%, 100% remains. And so in this sense, you cannot, you have to make a distinction between these two kinds of nityas, the independent and the dependent. But both are nitya, both are chaitana.
So when a Mayavada like that fellow who said that, is adopting the trappings of bhakti, is that a species of sahaja?
It can be. This the method that apparently was promulgated by Ramakrishna, and then modified and pushed on by Vivekananda. This kind of thing, where they really. The real truth is impersonalism, but it's so ultimately unattractive. And they really even, although Vivekananda claims to be following Shankaracharya, I talk to people who learn Mayavada philosophy from that school, and they don't really follow Shankaracharya. Because Shankaracharya says, what Mayavada philosophy really teaches is that the Absolute Truth has no energies. So this world around us, it is not there. It's illusory superimposition. It is not an energy of the Absolute Truth. As soon as you talk about the Absolute Truth having energies, then you're on a lower level of conventional discussion. And you're perceiving the Absolute Truth through the lens of Maya. Because you see a distinction. There's God and there's the world. Well, that's a duality. There's no duality. How do you solve the duality problem? There's no world. It's really not there. And the same about the difference between me and God. So it makes it really tough if you want to compete with the Christians and do social work and things like that, to say that actually the world is so useless that it doesn't even exist. So they really don't teach the straight dope as it comes from Shankaracharya.
Hmm. Why bother with the transformation if there's no transformation?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, anyway, I was dealing some conference when I was stating what Shankaracharya said. Some scholars objected, and so I tracked down the quotation and says this is what he said, and they were amazed because they'd already been fed it through another filter. They think Mayavada philosophy is sort of an impersonal, absolute, emanating a world. That's not it. That's actually more incoherent. But Mayavada philosophy, there's an impersonal, absolute, period.
But it's a natural consequence, because Mayavada philosophy is such a juggle. They get juggled up.
Yeah, sure. Because it's all meaningless anyway, so you might as well say whatever you want. Yeah, you could go that far. I don't agree with these. Sri Prabhupada.